If the truth was known and a light was shown on every hidden part of my soul, most would turn away, shake their heads and say, he still has such a long way to go. If the truth was known, you'd see that the only good in me is Jesus. Oh, it's Jesus. If the walls could speak of the times I'd been weak, when everybody thought I was strong, could I show my face if it weren't for the grace, the one who's known the truth all along? If the walls could speak, they'd say that my only hope is the grace of Jesus, the grace of Jesus.
That's about all that needs to be said, I think. You may recognize that. It's the Stephen Curtis Chapman song that I heard a long, long time ago. And never really heard the words as they were meant to be heard until recently. The thing that I love about this group that has helped me is just how we get together every week, whether we're here or not, and we just are open and vulnerable with each other. We kind of take down that testosterone wall that I've told Tom about before. And, you know, regardless of where we're at in our journey, whether we're just getting to know God's plan for our life, and regardless of where we gather on Sunday, we can come here as men and just break down that wall. So thank you for putting in the hearts of the men that started this group God's plan for this, and I'm honored to be here. When I was asked to give my story, I considered what to share, and as I told Jim, he asked me what date to do it. I picked the earliest one to, like a Band-Aid, just rip it off. I wanted to get it done because I knew right away when they asked to share that I'm pretty good sometimes at singing and performing, but when you talk, unless you're really good, you can't do that. So what I've centered on sharing today is control, and just sharing who's in control of my life and just kind of be open with that. I don't know what else to share except my story, so that's what I'm going to tell. I've lived most of my life with an internal struggle between what I wanted to do and the perception that I had that everybody else wanted me to live up to. And 5 years ago, I hit a crossroads where I had to be open and surrender to God's plan with no idea of what the future was going to hold. There's a little background on me. I grew up a pastor's son. My mother grew up a missionary child and lived in Japan for the first 18 years of her life. With the exception of one uncle that's in business, everybody on both sides of my family is in full-time ministry as a pastor or a missionary. So to say I grew up around the church is obviously an understatement. It was a part of my fiber, and it was just always there. Let me first start off by saying that I was extremely blessed and just unbelievably lucky to grow up in the family that I did, and I treasure that family heritage. In fact, he doesn't know I'm going to do this, but my father came here today, and he retired from 38 years as a senior pastor, so Dad, I love you. I think he actually preaches more now in retirement than he did on Sundays. But I love you, and so thank you for being here. But the problem is that I took my upbringing for granted, and church was just a role that I played. I got really good at playing church. By high school, I started to feel that it was basically inevitable that I was going to be a minister. I mean, that's just my family. That's what I grew up in. But honestly, to me, whether it be consciously, I think sometimes, or subconsciously, it felt like a trap. It felt like it was just a trap that I had to avoid at all costs. People would say things like, you are going to follow your father's footsteps, aren't you? Like it was ordained and there was nothing I could do, and I wasn't about to go against God. And so by high school, it just kind of seemed that was what I was going to do. So, hey, I played that role. You know, great, go to a Christian college. And the pressure to become a pastor escalated even more while I was in college. There was two instances in particular. I had a girl that I had my eye on and asked her out, and she said no. And so I asked her out again, and she said no. And I asked her out again, and she said no. And so I finally am like, why? Well, you're not going to be a pastor. You're not a Christian ministries major, and I just know that I'm supposed to be a pastor's wife. So I got a clerical call from my dad, and I went up and asked her again. I'm just kidding, no. But I was ready to jump in with both feet. Oh, okay, that's what I'm supposed to do. I know it, I'll just, you know. But I couldn't do it. I had a guy, a ministry professor, call me into his office and literally tell me he had a dream that I was supposed to be a pastor. So I'm walking out of the door and I'm ready to change my major and go on. But because of this internal struggle with me and my heart, I couldn't go through with it. But the problem is that this created an immense amount of guilt, because now I know what I want to do, but I'm turning my back on the call to ministry. And I couldn't go through with it because of that heart, but I felt a tremendous guilt. Now, some of it was direct pressure that I spoke about, you know, some instances. But I do want to say, and not just because he's here, but that my father gave me no pressure. It's the irony of it. You would think that maybe a pastor's kid, that the pastor would be the one, you know, but it really wasn't. It was, he was very open with me and say, you could do anything you want to do. And he was completely honest about that. I think it was more of the pressure I put on myself, maybe some paranoia, some direct things, but I think it was a pressure that I put on myself. But it was obvious to me what I want to be. And now this isn't going to be a shock to those of you that know me, but all I wanted to do from a very young age was play golf all day and do concerts at night. That was my master plan. I'm going to be a rock star and a PGA Tour player. I don't know how I was going to work that out travel-wise, but golf and music are my things. And to those of you that know me, that's probably not a surprise. Now, the music is pretty easy to trace. Both my parents sing. I talked about my mom being a missionary kid. My grandparents were missionaries in Japan, and they had a music ministry. So they would go around to different the Christian community in Japan, which isn't large, and sing, and they had albums. We actually jokingly call them the Gaithers of Japan. All four of their children, extremely musically talented, great singers. In fact, my uncle Tim, when he was 19, played with the Tokyo Philharmonic as a concert pianist, and still to this day, he's a phenomenal pianist. My sister's a singer-songwriter, professional singer-songwriter, and tours the West Coast and is based out of San Francisco. So that's pretty easy to find out where the music came from. Now, the golf's a little harder to figure out, but God's hand was definitely in it. I mentioned that I'm a pastor's kid. Well, the church parsonage was on the 14th hole of a country club. Does that happen? I mean, okay. So from the fifth grade on, I spent every night, probably when I was supposed to do my homework, but I spent every night chipping and putting around that green, and that actually led to it's actually a funny story. The pro came around one night, and I'm chipping and putting, and I mean, we weren't members of the country club, obviously. He knew I wasn't supposed to be out there, but he could have kicked me off, but he said, hey, Sean, come down to the pro shop tomorrow, and let's talk about this. So I'm going in thinking I'm in trouble. Well, he gave me a job. And from the sixth grade on, Doug Booth up in Fort Wayne taught me the game of golf, and that led to a college golf scholarship and some other things in golf. So after college, 4 years of college, I had the big plan here. I was going to be a professional golfer in Florida and had a job lined up, and I was ready to move. There was one problem, is that this overriding guilt consciousness from some of the things that happened while I was in college was telling me that I was supposed to be a youth minister. And so I thought hard about this and got in the car and headed south and started working at the golf course. So And I was going to avoid that trap. So I got down to Florida, got a job at the golf course, and been down there a couple weeks ago. And, you know, when you go to church every single Sunday from the time you're born until you get out of college, you know, you go down to Florida, you know, what are you going to do? So 2 weeks later, I found a Methodist church. My father's a Methodist minister, and went to that church. And afterwards, I was shaking hands with the pastor and just mentioned in passing that my father was a Methodist minister. So he invited me to lunch. That was Thursday. He had met me Sunday. And after a three-hour lunch, guess what church needed a youth minister? And sight unseen, he hired me as a part-time youth director. Trapped again. I say that jokingly. I spent 3 years as a part-time pay, full-time job as a youth director, and have some great relationships with young kids in that Florida, little Florida town that was a great benefit to me, as I think hopefully as well as them. But you know, this whole call just kept on arising. So I ended up spending 7 years in Florida, and the last 3 years I actually spent living my childhood dream by traveling the U.S. and Canada, attempting to make the PGA Tour. And there's just one problem with that. You got to be really good to make a living doing that, and I just wasn't that good. So I literally sang for my supper by playing music gigs two or three nights a week to support myself, and that's just what I did. So during that time, my father was a pastor here in Kokomo at St. Luke's United Methodist Church, and I came up and to visit him, and while visiting there, I met a girl from Kokomo. After 2 years, we were engaged, and I moved here late fall, and we were married in April of 2003. We planned to move back to Florida at the end of that summer. That was my big plan. I was still playing golf. I still had the music, and had residence down there, and so we were going to move in August. But while living in Kokomo, I was helping my father's church with some worship music leading, and someone in town heard me, and that led to an invitation to fill in as a worship leader for the Oak Brook youth group. Now, around that same time, Oak Brook's youth music leader left. Can you see what's happening here? It's happening again. You know, I've been away from it for 4 years, but no sweat. I'm moving back to Florida in August. You know, I got a time period here. I'll fill in. This is perfect. You know, they'll find somebody else, and I'll take off. But what happened was, in that month, 2 months, I started to realize I kind of like Kokomo. I mean, this is kind of cool. My in-laws are here. My parents are close. My wife's here. This is where she's from. But more importantly, I was starting to meet and connect with people and really connecting with the services that I was going to. And I just really started to like it, which made me start assessing, you know, if I wanted my life to revolve around whether I made a 3-foot putt or not. And judging by the amount of money I'd made in the past 3 years, I knew that probably wasn't a good option. So, hey, I think I might stick around. Well, they asked me to interview for the position. And so that was it. I'm like, the inevitable trap is now here. It's inevitable. I'm going to be a full-time youth minister or full-time church leadership. But this was the cool thing. It was in music. It wasn't the senior pastor thing that I've been so afraid of my whole life. So this is it. I found what I'm supposed to do with my life. You know, God led me to the right place. And honey, we're going to stay in Kokomo, which she wasn't upset about. This is where she grew up. But what happened over the next month was a month-long interview process where the church staff was trying to get to know my heart and authentically searching for a sense of the real me. And I thought I was saying all the right things and thought I had the skills to do the job, but inside I was starting to get real with myself, and I'm being forced to do that. So that brings me to the decision that I alluded to at the beginning of my talk. After a month-long process, the youth minister at the time had been asked to speak at an FCA golf camp, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, down in Indianapolis. Hey, perfect for me, you know, golf, music. So I was leading worship down there, again, part of the interview, so where he and I could connect and go with each other. And I thought the week was going great. And he wanted to have lunch at the end of that week. And I kind of knew that this was about the time that I was going to get the job. But the night before that lunch that we were supposed to have, probably for the first time in my life, I sat completely alone in that hotel room with God, and I just was quiet. Now, I'd never done that before, but over this last month, I had been just feeling all these things brew up in me, and I felt very clearly that I was not supposed to accept that position, but that I was supposed to stay in Kokomo and at the church. This was pretty hard. I didn't want to be in church leadership this time, not because it was a trap or because I felt like I was, you know, this was an inevitable thing, but this time I wasn't ready to do it because I wasn't ready. I needed to mature. I needed to grow. I can't fake these people out. So I'm not going to do it. So on the way to the lunch, I told my bride of 3 months my intentions for the lunch. Now, when you're married for 3 months and the only job offer you have on the horizon that she's seen over the past 3 years, and you're about ready to turn it down, that's a little scary to a new bride. But I said, this is what I have to do. I have to do this. So we got to the dinner, and before we put down the menus and they came up to take our order, before then I just started. I said, I need to tell you something. I'm not ready to take this position. However, I would like to continue to attend and volunteer where I'm needed. Now, his jaw dropped because he was there to tell me that I wasn't getting the job. Now, I don't know if you've seen the commercial where the guy's in his head and he's walking with his girl and he's thinking about all the ways to break up with her, and then she looks at him and breaks up with him, and he says, but we were so great together, you know? I mean, seriously, if God would not have directed me to say that first, I just know myself well enough that if he would have rejected me, I would have been thinking of all the reasons why I needed that job. So God just really directed the exact timing of that just perfectly. Because what this did was when I initiated that, it just created a great thing. He said he thought two things could happen. He thought my wife Jamie was going to cry and I'd probably punch him. That's what he thought. The best results of that lunch was going to happen. But he said, exactly, he said, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know, but I guess I'm a Kokomoian. But for the first time in my life, I was truly ready to release control and allow God to guide my steps in his direction, not mine. And I had no clue what that direction was. So here's the good news. The past 5 years, they've been amazing. I have a wonderful family, and we've been blessed with two boys. Sam and Jack are 2.5 and 4 months old. I found a vocation that I'm truly passionate about and enjoy waking up and going to every morning. And the best part is that I'm able to use my passion that God gave me for music and golf for Him and not me. I'm part of a music team at my church, and I love serving with wonderful musicians and even better people. And the funny thing is that whole week-long FCA golf camp that I went to has led me to the last 5 years spending a week in the summer playing golf all day and leading worship at night and building into high schoolers using my golf knowledge to help them with their swing and hopefully help them with their lives and get them closer to God at night through those chapels. So I guess I got my wish, golf in the day, music at night. Not the way I would have ever intended it, but the way he wanted it. But here's the real news. I fight myself every day to keep my hands off the wheel, and I lose that battle often. And even preparing for this talk has put a light up to my life and my story, and I've seen clearly where I need to grow and where I need to mature. But I hold tightly to His grace and His mercy and His call in my life, even though the way it wasn't the way that I envisioned it, Like I said, it was the way He wanted it. I sang the beginning of a song that talked about some of my weaknesses and my struggles. But the song ends. It's not the end. But oh, the goodness and the grace in Him. He takes it all and makes it mine, and causes His light in me to shine. And He loves me with a love that never ends. Just as I am, not as I do. Could this be real? Could this be true? This could only be a miracle. This could only be the miracle of mercy.